This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. All right, the big story this morning, if you're just waking up, and this is of particular interest to the whole country, but especially our listeners on WCBM in Baltimore, there has been a collision between a cargo vessel and the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, and that bridge has collapsed. There are emergency teams at the scene, and Baltimore's fire department said rescuers are looking for at least seven people believed to have fallen into the water. And we don't have much more information than that at the moment. And as soon as we do have more information, we will bring it to you. But I'm looking at these pictures of this bridge, and it's just terrible. Absolutely terrible to see a bridge which people drive on every day, which you think of as being strong and sustainable, to collapse like I don't know, a broken down erector set, a Lego tower after my son throws it. So according to what we're seeing, where data from marine traffic shows that the Singapore flagged Dolly ship, that apparently is the ship that collided with the bridge, the rescue operation so far is also visible. We're going to watch it. We're going to keep an eye on it. And if you are in the area and you can describe to us what you're seeing, give us a call, 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. We'll get to your calls in a moment. A lot of other things to get to, a lot of other things happening in the world. There was this massive terrorist attack in Moscow on Friday, where 160 people or so, innocent people, in a concert hall were killed. The general consensus is that this was carried out by a terrorist group by the name of ISIS-K. ISIS-K is a particularly brutal terrorist group. They were an offshoot of the Pakistani Taliban. They, as I understand the history of this particular group, they changed their name to ISIS-K out of respect for ISIS, the larger terrorist group ISIS. And they have been killing innocent people like crazy for the last several years. They're the ones responsible for that terrorist attack in Afghanistan, which resulted in the killing of 13 American servicemen plus untold numbers of Afghan servicemen. They were responsible for a massive terrorist attack in Iran. The Russians say they have apprehended all four gunmen. And they're also making noises that maybe it wasn't ISIS-K that was responsible for this. Maybe it was the Ukrainians. And this seems to be exacerbating tensions between the U.S. and Russia. What does this mean for the future of U.S.-Russian relations? We're going to explore that question with George Beebe, coming up in about 20 minutes. George Beebe is one of the smartest men when it comes to diplomacy in general, when it comes to national security, but especially when it comes to the issue of Russia. He's been right about a great deal
and we've been talking to him for years. I think there are fewer analysts about the Russia picture that are more accurate, more insightful, and more informative, honestly, than George Beebe. So we'll get his take on what's happening in just a bit. Speaking of the issue of diplomacy, have you followed any of this debate over embassies, over the flags that are permitted at American embassies? My view on this is the only flags that should fly at governmental buildings are governmental flags. If you're in the United States, for instance, I think if you're a school, if you're a city hall, you should have the flag of the city or whatever the municipality is. You should have the flag of the state. You should have the American flag. And I believe there's also a requirement that you have to fly the POWMIA flag. I think any other flag, whether it's a cause that I might agree with or disagree with, I don't think that has a place on a governmental pole. So this is playing out abroad because there's now this debate over whether or not the gay pride flag should be on American embassies abroad. And maybe some of you have heard about this already, but basically LGBTQ pride flags are going to be banned at U.S. embassies as part of a deal to avoid a government shutdown, which was passed by Congress. This is a bipartisan measure, a $1.2 trillion, 1,012-page spending package, which I'm sure almost no one has read. It does not explicitly mention barring pride flags from flying at embassies. Its text embraces a Republican-led effort to prohibit the display of LGBTQ pride flags at governmental buildings. It says, quote, none of the funds appropriated or otherwise made available by this act may be obligated or expended to fly or display a flag over a facility of the U.S. Department of State other than the U.S. flag, the POWMIA flag, the hostage and wrongful detainee flag, flag of a state, flag of an Indian tribal government, official branded flag of a U.S. agency, or the sovereign flag of other countries. That's the text of the bill. So the provision doesn't explicitly address the display of LGBT flags on embassy grounds or in offices, but that's clearly what it's designed to do. The Biden administration urged Congress to pass the spending bill, and they described this as a compromise between Democrats and Republicans in a statement a couple of days ago. So that's where we are. All right. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. You know, I have 9,000 news apps on my phone, so I keep picking up my phone to see if there's any news on this bridge situation. And I've reached out to a bunch of people in the Coast Guard and in terms of and in Baltimore to see if there's any updates. And I keep looking at my phone to see if anybody's texted me or if any of these news apps are reporting anything. I just received word, one of these news apps, I'm not sure why they chose right now to inform me of this. Maybe it's because I keep opening this particular, this one is the Citizen app. It tells me that a sexual offender is registered as living 0.2 miles from my current location. So, better be careful walking to the car a little bit later. Otherwise, I don't know, we're going to steer clear of Jamal C. So, all right, and that goes for you guys as well. Stay clear of Jamal C. 800-848-9222. Johnny is in Sullivan. Hey there, Johnny.
Hey, Frank. Long time I haven't spoken to you. How you doing? Yeah, I just got to put your radio show on. I heard this thing with the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Something is strange. I mean, usually bridges open up to allow room for a boat or cargo ship to go through, like a certain bridge that I see when I go down to Jones Beach. I don't know what the story is with this bridge. Does it have the capability of opening up on each side?
It doesn't
like a
look
door?
That way. It doesn't look that way. Hopefully we'll be able to get an infrastructure expert maybe tomorrow to chat about this. But I don't know if you saw the video yet, but no, it doesn't look like the bridge has that kind of capability. I know exactly what you're describing, and I've seen
right.
that too. It doesn't look like this bridge has that kind of thing.
Also, how is it that I just can't see how a cargo ship can't can't realize like the height requirement for them to pass or not pass.
That's the first thing that I said as well. And I asked a gentleman in the area who sounded like a boater in that area too. And basically he said that ships like this, cargo ships like this, almost never are in this particular river at night. They're almost always there in the middle of the day, and it's very rare with limited visibility that they would be there at night. I agree with you.
I heard him say that. Yeah, this might be something more to this than meets the eye. This might even be a terrorist attack for all we know. I mean, I'm not saying it is, but something's not right. There was a loud sound that gentleman overheard that could have been an explosive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to jump to any conclusions necessarily, especially while there's, potentially seven bodies in the water that folks are worrying about rescuing. But I agree with you in that it seems unusual. The whole thing seems unusual. And, we'll see where it goes. But, we'll find out more in the coming days, hopefully, Johnny. But you're right. You would think whoever's piloting that kind of a cargo ship would be experienced enough to know that, I don't know, there are certain places that cargo ships can go and certain places they can't.
Right.
We'll see what happens, Johnny. Thank you. 800-848-9222. Now, as for that ship that collided with this bridge, it's being reported that the ship involved in the bridge collision appears to have sustained damage. That's what a fire department official has told CNBC. Now, we don't know if the word of the CNBC reporters can be taken too seriously because they're still beside themselves that their bosses have hired Ronna McDaniel, and they're really just dismayed that there's still been no apology to Kristen Welker for having to interview Ronna McDaniel. The Baltimore Fire Department battalion chief said there appeared to be people on the crossing at the time of the incident. So we'll see where this goes. Neil is in Baltimore. Neil, what do we know about this bridge situation?
Well, I was listening to a live broadcast. They said the name of the barge that hit it was called the Dolly.
I mentioned that.
I just looked at the video and it crashed right into the structure, the base of the structure. It's not a lift bridge or anything like that. It's been a long-standing bridge there, and it's usually the bailout for all the traffic that 95 and 695, which is the loop around Baltimore. So the traffic is going to be horrific around here, I think, for quite a while.
I can imagine, and there are already street closures all over this area as of now, but especially with all those emergency vehicles there, I would think this is going to be a bad situation for anyone that uses this route to commute. Yeah.
Hey, I also wanted to comment earlier, I caught a piece about the children living at home,
mm-hmm.
and I have two daughters. My wife and I separated about 6 years ago, and the youngest one is with her mom only because of schooling and zoning. She's graduating this year. But my 24-year-old, almost 25-year-old, is the sweetest child in the world. And having her around is such a bonus for me. And I don't know about other parents and other situations, but to send her out, and she has a boyfriend, and they're thinking about moving into a place together, but it's not easy. Let me tell you, it is not easy for a young
I know. I absolutely. I understand that. There's a different economic reality from now as opposed to 1965, Neil. No question about it. Neil, thank you. 800-848-9222. John is in Baltimore. John, what are you seeing? What are you hearing?
Hey, good morning, Frank.
Morning.
It's an Ultramax container ship that hit the bridge.
Now, for those of us that don't know anything, educate me. What is an Ultramax container ship?
Ultramax is one of the largest container ships it's actually the largest container ship that calls on the Port of Baltimore. I think it's probably over 1,000 feet long.
Okay, and
it lost propulsion coming down the Brewerton Channel. And when one ship loses propulsion, it has no steering.
Ah, I see. So it's not as if this vessel thought that it could make it underneath the bridge and was mistaken. The ship was malfunctioning.
It's not a clearance issue. There's actually video of this on YouTube TV right now. that you can see the you can actually see it hit the bridge and yeah. watch the bridge collapse.
Yeah, I have tweeted it. I have tweeted it as well. If people want to see it, they can go to my Twitter at Frank Morano. It's terrible to see it collapse so easily like this. So that's what we're operating under is that there was some sort of mechanical or technical malfunction that caused the vessel to lose control of its ability to steer and it collided with the base of the bridge.
Yes, that's exactly what's happened.
That makes sense. Thank you, John. And we were talking to Ray in Baltimore, who said he was going out on his boat. Ray, how close have you been able to get? What are you seeing out there?
I'm right here at it with all the apparatus, the governor, the mayor, Palmer County executive. I mean, now it's a recovery. They're going, the divers just went in the water, and they're looking to start trying to recover the bodies, the people out of their vehicles. It's down all the way. The vessel went too far towards the right side of the water from what it looks and hit the bridge and knocked the whole mast down. It's down like you wouldn't believe. So it was definitely the captain of the vessel. He's negligent for this because that's what I'm hearing. So it's a mess. Now there's marine units out there. They just sent divers in the water, and they'll be able to know more when it turns daylight. But now it's just a recovery.
Well, what can you tell, if anything, Ray, about the state of the ship that collided with the bridge? How's that ship looking?
I can't see that until daylight, and they got enough. There's boats all around it where he can't move, so they're leaving him sit right where he's at.
Now, you're obviously not an emergency service boat or anything like that. Of the boats that you're seeing in the vicinity of the bridge now, Ray, what are there a lot of people like you that are just regular civilian boaters, or is most of the boats that you're seeing all emergency services?
All emergency services. I docked my boat and came around and walked around to the area where the bridge is on the other side and came up the back way through the channel. And I docked it and walked over. I'm looking directly at the bridge now. I'm about 100 yards away from it.
Ray, I appreciate all your updates. Please keep us posted. I'm going to put you back on hold. We may want to get some more information from you, okay?
That'll work.
Thanks, Ray. Appreciate it. Keep us posted. And that goes for everybody else in Baltimore, too. Curious what you're seeing, what you're hearing, what's going on there, what the scene is over there. And obviously, we're hoping for the best. 800-848-9222. What's being reported is that there are 7 people unaccounted for. We'll see what happens. 800-848-9222. Jeff is in Tom's River. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing, Frank? Frank, I was just calling. I've dealt with the ports in New York and New Jersey for years. These ships, they all have captains in them, but multiple captains. One brings it across the ocean. When it gets close to port, they get another captain out there. He brings the boat into port. Then while it sits in port, there's somebody completely different that's the captain of that ship. So for it to take a wrong turn, that doesn't happen.
Well, but they're saying, I mean, the gentleman that we spoke to said that it wasn't a wrong turn. It was a mechanical failure where the ship was essentially rudderless and it was just drifting because it had no ability to steer.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. That would make more sense than, just somebody lost was a container ship in the Baltimore Harbor.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Hey, appreciate it, Jeff. If you have any other insights, let us know. 800-848-9222. We will bring you any other news as this occurs. But as of now, it is being reported that the ship that collided with this bridge has sustained damage. There are emergency teams at the scene of this bridge. If you're just waking up, there was a bridge collapse in Baltimore, after a cargo vessel, the Dolly, hit this bridge, the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. And we'll tell you anything there is to know. Now, we're going to talk with George Beebe in about 10 minutes. The Russia death toll at this concert has risen to over 140 people. There are at least 150 others innocent people who are injured. What does this mean for the nature of the U.S.-Russian relationship, if anything? I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I don't think it's a positive. But first, we're going to chat with Noam Layden and get an update on some of the news he's following as well. All right. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Anybody in the Baltimore area, we're thinking about you, especially our listeners at WCBM. Give us a call, 800-848-9222. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is Greg Kelly. To my friends in the construction business, if you've been injured on the job, make just one call to the construction accident lawyers at the law offices of Darren T. Moore. With hundreds of five-star reviews, they fight for more justice for every client and have secured millions of dollars in compensation for New York construction workers. Call 888-444-ATTY. That's 888-444-2889 for a free consultation. More diligence, more persistence, and more justice.
Prior results don't guarantee similar outcomes.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
It's a human sign.
After the hour, this is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. I'm going to talk with George Beebe about this terrorist attack in Russia in just a moment. But first,
stand by for The Other Side of Midnight's news.
From New York City, The Other Side of Midnight and its affiliated stations present national and international news with Frank Morano and news director Noam Layden. Their summary of the world news and personal comments. Get the rest of the story.
Hello, Noam.
Good morning, Frank. All the news, of course, at this hour about this Francis Scott Key Bridge that collapsed into the Patapsco River. This was about 1:30 this morning. We're trying to get details. As you can imagine, it is a pretty fluid scene as they try to figure out themselves, firefighters in Baltimore, police, exactly what took place. This is a huge shipping port. It's the sixth largest in the country. They support about 15,000 jobs. This is no small port. Oh. And I know I'd heard some people calling in before saying it was unusual that a ship would be going at that hour. That's not the case. I hear from somebody at the port. We were communicating via emails saying that, no, these ships go in and out all times
a
day.
Oh, so that's not the case. Even in the middle of the night, you still see cargo ships.
It's
like
an active port 24/7. So huge port. Baltimore always has been. And the bridge, of course, named after Francis Scott Key, who wrote the Star Spangled Banner, has been up since 1977. Baltimore's mayor, Brandon Scott, actually gave a state of the city last night. So it was a late night for him. He says he was woken up early this morning, not too long after this crash at 1:30. Nobody would confirm if there are any deaths, but they did confirm there were cars on the bridge at the time that the ship hit it. So we don't know if there's anybody in the river. We're getting all kinds of rumors, seven bodies in, but no confirmation from police or firefighters in Baltimore. This is all from eyewitnesses, so we just don't know yet. Of course, we'll follow it all morning. And if you listen here on our local affiliate, WABC, starting at 5 o'clock, we'll have some people who are at the scene who will give us a little more detail.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, for the next half hour that we're here, we'll bring any information to the folks as well. And for anyone listening on WCBM that's near the scene, you can certainly give us a call. I am seeing a report that all crew on board the ship, the Dolly, which crashed into the bridge, have been accounted for. That's according to the management company that owns this ship. Synergy Marine Group confirmed that the Dolly collided with one of the key bridge's pillars while under the control of two pilots. The firm said the exact cause of the incident was yet to be determined, but the vessel's individual incident response service has been mobilized. I don't necessarily know what that includes, but it's been mobilized.
And there is confirmation now that this container ship flying under a Singapore flag, I'm not sure what that'll mean at the end of the day. The video, of course, sensational. If you go look at the your Facebook page, it is incredible. Now, it's hard to tell. Is it going under the wrong part of the bridge? Is that what caused the crash? Are they not supposed to be going under that bridge? That part we couldn't get any confirmation on before we came on.
The folks that were calling were saying they think that this ship lost its ability to steer. And it basically, they were not able to steer away from the bridge pillar that it collided into.
Yeah, that's possible. We just, you know, it's so early, middle of the night.
Right.
You know, Baltimore's not a huge city. You know, obviously very active scene at this point. It will be all morning long. Lots of police, lots of firefighters are there trying to figure out what's going on. And there is confirmation that divers have gone into the water. So maybe there are cars that went in. We just don't know for sure yet.
Thank you, Gnome.
And now you know the rest of the story.
By the way, one thing I did not know, not that I know anything about any of this stuff, but, you know, you're kind of forced to become in the 90 seconds between segments as a little bit of an expert in this, or at least fake it on radio. By law, all large non-military vessels going in and out of the Chesapeake Bay have to have a local expert at the helm who knows the tides and the hazards. And that there was a container ship that ran aground in Chesapeake Bay 2 years ago, and an investigation led to pilots being banned from using their mobile phones while in charge of a ship. Isn't that interesting? I think that's probably a prudent policy. You don't want the person piloting the ship to be texting and distracted, but that is apparently a regulation. There's one report, and again, this is all very new and unconfirmed, but there's one report that as many as 20 workers are now thought to have fallen into the water. That's what the Baltimore Fire Department's communication chief has told the BBC. So there's been a major bridge collapse in Baltimore after being struck by a cargo ship. It is being described as a developing mass casualty event. You can see the video of the collapse. It is the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. I've tweeted it. You can take a look at the moment this bridge collapsed from different angles at Frank Morano. We're wishing for the best here. I mean, obviously, the more time passes, you would think the bleaker it looks for, whether it's 7 or 20, those are the two numbers that we've heard so far, the people that are accounted for. But as we learn anything, we will bring it to you. Let's go from one tragedy on our continent to a tragedy that took place a few days ago on the other side of the ocean, that being the terrorist attack that took place in Moscow at a concert hall. Now, what's being reported here is that this was a situation where the group ISIS-K is responsible for this. The Russian government says they have all four of the shooters in custody. The number that I've seen has about 140 innocent people being killed, possibly as many as 150 others injured. Some others are saying are not accepting that that authorship of ISIS-K as being responsible here. And some have pointed to the war with Ukraine here. And a lot of folks wondering what this means for the future of U.S.-Russian relations. The man that knows more about Russia than anyone that we've spoken to on this program, at least as it relates to interacting with the United States, is George Beebe. These days, he is the director of grand strategy at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. He's been a diplomat. He's worked in and out of the government. And he's also the author of a terrific book called The Russia Trap: How Our Shadow War with Russia Could spiral into catastrophe. And unfortunately, a lot of the things that George wrote about in that book have proven prophetic. George, thanks so much for joining me so early in the morning.
Thanks, Frank.
George, let's talk about what we know as it relates to this terrorist attack at the concert hall on Friday. What do we know for a fact? What's indisputable?
Well, I think both sides, both the Russians and the U.S., acknowledged that the United States passed a warning to Russia through official intelligence channels some time ago. We had information indicating that some sort of a terrorist attack was likely and that the targets were perhaps a concert hall in Moscow or other public venues. And the Russians acknowledged that we, in fact, passed that warning. Putin has also, in his most recent statement, acknowledged that the perpetrators were what he called Islamists. What is at a question right now is whether it was only ISIS and these Islamists that were involved, or, as Putin has suggested might be the case, Iraq may have been the mastermind behind all of this and has used ISIS or these Islamists as a cutout to mask its involvement. The United States is strongly denying that that is the case. The U.S. issued a public statement almost immediately after the attack on the concert, saying that we were quite confident that Ukraine was not involved, and that this, in fact, was ISIS that we had been monitoring through our intelligence for quite some time on this.
Given the nature of the current U.S.-Russian relationship, where we're basically engaged in this proxy war in Ukraine, and I would venture to say that the relationship between these two countries, the two greatest nuclear powers on the face of the earth, is as bad as it's been since the Berlin Wall collapse. Given the nature of the tensions between those two countries, how would Russia have reacted to a warning from the United States about a forthcoming terrorist attack?
Well, you know, I think you're right. The way the Russians are reacting to this is an indication of just how bad the U.S.-Russian relationship has become and just how precarious things are right now. It wasn't very many years ago that we, in fact, passed a similar warning to Russia about a potential terrorist attack in St. Petersburg. I think this might have been in 2018 or 2019. And the Russians took action and thwarted that plot and prevented the terrorists from following through. And the Russians actually expressed public gratitude afterwards for the U.S. warning. So a lot has changed since then. And I think what we're seeing right now is a situation where the two sides were unable, essentially, to manage what should have been a fairly straightforward thing. The United States passed this warning along as part of our longstanding duty to warn policy. The Russians have done the same thing with us several times. But the Russians this time were deeply suspicious that there was something else going on, that the United States was in fact trying to cover up a Ukrainian plot against Russia. And if we're not able to handle a matter like this, how can we be confident that the U.S. and Russia could manage some sort of unintended clash over Ukraine and prevent that from escalating into direct combat? I think this is a very worrisome development.
But just to be clear, though, that while Vladimir Putin is blaming Islamists for the attack, he's also kind of throwing some shade towards Ukraine. Based on what you're seeing, it doesn't appear that Ukraine was involved in this terrorist attack at all.
It doesn't, not at this point. No evidence has emerged that links Ukraine to this attack. I think the most one can say is that Putin has alleged the perpetrators were trying to escape across the Ukrainian border, where he said Ukraine had prepared a window for their escape. Now, whether that's true or not, we don't know. Not even clear that Putin sincerely believes that this is true. But there is no question that Russia's intelligence services are going to be looking very hard for evidence linking these perpetrators to Ukraine in some way. And if they find things that they find convincing, then that's going to bode very ill for relations, not just between Russia and Ukraine, which are obviously in a state of war, but also between Russia and the United States, because they're going to be very suspicious that the United States was involved in some way.
So going forward, obviously, it sounds like it's a very bleak picture, meaning the relationship between the United States and Russia. But given the realities of the ongoing situation in Ukraine, what can be done from an American perspective to not exacerbate things further?
Well, given how much mistrust there is in the relationship, we've really got our work cut out for us on this. The Russians are deeply suspicious. Their instinct is not to believe us. But I think one of the things the White House can do is express condolences. The White House press spokesman has issued a statement expressing sympathy for the victims in all of this. But we've been much more concerned about denying Ukrainian involvement than we have been in expressing condolences for the victims of this tragedy. And that's something that I think might chip away at Russia's suspicions. President Biden himself has not said anything publicly about this, and that's something I think the United States might want to consider. The other thing is that through intelligence channels, we could be forthcoming about what we know. It's not clear how much detail we've provided to the Russians about this particular plot. There's always a balance one has to strike between exposing intelligence sources and methods and conveying enough information to allow another side to act on warning. And I just don't know. No one out in the public domain can know exactly what has been provided to the Russians on this. But this is a situation where providing some more detail might help to ease some of Russia's suspicions on all of this. So those are the kinds of things we ought to be thinking about.
I'm not sure if you were working in the government at the time. I think you might have been. But a lot of us remember the story of the Tsarnaev brothers, the brothers that were responsible for the Boston Marathon bombing. And it was reported that Russia had given the United States government a warning about these young men and their extremist tendencies and affiliations. Obviously, these young men were still in a position where they were able to carry out the Boston Marathon bombing. Does something like that happen, George, because we're not taking a Russian warning seriously? Does something like that happen because of bureaucratic incompetence? Or does a warning get ignored from not just Russia, but any other country for some other reason?
Well, bureaucrats are always an issue in this sort of thing. And yes, what you're describing did in fact happen. The Russians did provide some warning through intelligence channels about the Tsarnaevs and their radicalization, their associates back in Russia. I think the United States did take some steps at that time to investigate. The question was, how thorough was that investigation? Was follow-through sufficient on the American side? And that has been a point of controversy in retrospect after that attack on the Boston Marathon. So very rarely does any state simply ignore a warning. And that wasn't the case here with Russia regarding this concert attack. Putin, after the American warning, did speak derisively about American intentions. He did suggest that this might be a provocation. But he also announced in tandem with that, that he was putting Russia's security services on heightened alert as a result of that warning. So although the Russians were suspicious.
I'm sorry to interrupt, George, but just to be clear from my perspective, that announcement of heightened security,
that announcement took place before the actual attack?
Yes, that's right.
Interesting. Okay.
So it wasn't that the Russians ignored the American warning. Were they skeptical of it? Were they questioning of our motives? Absolutely. Did they ignore it? I think the answer to that is no, at least if Putin's public statements are any indication.
The war in Ukraine, which obviously we've spent some time talking about over the course of the last 2 years, there's a whole battle over the level of American aid to Ukraine and what it should be and how it should come. What are you hearing and seeing about how the war itself is going? It's been a frustrating thing for those of us that just want to know what's happening to get accurate information about this, because it seems like both sides have a vested interest in doing some spinning. How do you see the war going?
Well, you're right. There's an information war that's going on in parallel to the actual fighting on the battlefield. So it does make getting accurate information very difficult. What I think is happening right now is that the Russians have been wearing down, exhausting Ukraine's ability to continue fighting over time. The Russians have looked at the situation and said they're not likely to defeat American technology and American intelligence, which have been critical to Ukraine's fortunes on the battlefield, through some sort of lightning maneuver that breaks through Ukrainian forces and encircles them. Rather, they've decided, just like the North in the American Civil War fighting against the superior generalship of the South, the key to victory is just attrition, using Russia's larger population, its superior military manufacturing capabilities, and its ability to outlast the Ukrainians as the key to success. And right now that seems to be working. The Russians are not breaking through in a dramatic way against Ukraine, but they are steadily reducing the number of Ukrainians that can actually fight. They're exhausting Ukraine's supplies of artillery shells and air defense missiles, and they're doing so more rapidly than the United States and Europe can replace them. So the longer this war goes on, the worse things look for Ukraine. And the Ukrainians are now resorting to other methods to try to change Russia's approach. They're doing things like strikes against Russian naval forces in the Black Sea, trying to take the battle onto Russian Federation territory proper through longer-range drone strikes and things like that. And that's one of the reasons why the Russians are suspicious that the Ukrainians might have been behind this attack. It's consistent with other approaches that they've taken to try to inflict pain on Russians inside the Russian Federation itself.
You know, just going back to the terrorist attack in the concert hall, assuming ISIS-K is responsible for it, some folks may be wondering, because I realize this is sort of a naive thing for someone as experienced in foreign policy as you, but a lot of Americans who don't study foreign policy closely, they keep an ear open for the news, and they've come to view, largely because of the government portrayal and the media portrayal, they've come to view Putin as the bad guy, and they've also come to view ISIS as the bad guy. And a lot of folks may not immediately understand why ISIS, in this case, bad guy A, would be brutally attacking bad guy B. Explain to folks what the relationship is like between the Russian government and Islamic terrorism these days. Why would ISIS want to carry out a terrorist attack like this on Russia?
Well, ISIS has long identified Russia as one of its primary adversaries, just as it regards the United States as one of its primary adversaries. The Russians have been in Syria, for example, backing the Assad regime's efforts to suppress ISIS, which had a prominent foothold in Syria for many years, and continues to some degree to have operations ongoing there. And this organization, ISIS-K, that's focused on Afghanistan, Iran, and Central Asia is primarily a Sunni Muslim radical organization that regards Russia as an obstacle to its goal of establishing a caliphate in that part of the world. And Russian relations with Iran have actually improved since Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Iran has been helping quite extensively Russia with drone strikes, drone manufacturers for the war. Iran is one of ISIS-K's foremost enemies as well. So not only do they regard Russia as a direct hostile country, it's also increasingly partnered with prominent ISIS-K enemies.
George Beebe, I always really enjoy our conversations, even if they so often happen when there are sad things happening in the world. Thank you for getting up early, and thank you for spending the time.
My pleasure, Frank.
George Beebe, you could check him out at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. Hey, if you want to be heard for 15 seconds, now seems as good a time as any. Give me a call, 800-848-9222, straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
The Other Side of Midnight. This is a great song by Stevie G and the Cosmonauts. We're going to give you an opportunity to be heard for 15 seconds. If I am leaving the airwaves, but we'll have more on this situation involving the bridge collapse tomorrow. And I am sure that this station will have updates all morning long. The latest, I mean, the belief that people have is that this was a machinery error. And that was the most likely cause of this crash. And a maritime safety expert is saying that's the case, that machine error was the culprit here. We're also keeping an eye on the water temperature because it is chilly. And the water temperature is below 10 degrees Celsius. So obviously that doesn't necessarily bode well for the prospects of anybody that is in the water right now. So we'll see where it goes. Meantime,
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Russ.
The United States is a squatter country that forced the removal of its indigenous people, but Mormons in Utah were the only religious squatters. However, in the Middle East, the whole country falsely uses religion to justify its brutal ongoing land theft.
E. Frank.
Yes, Frank, I don't want to scare the public or invoke the legal authorities, but I got a call from the beyond, from Laura Ingalls Wilder, and the police took a picture of the image. Do you think that guy's in control of the world at this time?
Raji.
Happy birthday, Curtis. But you know you need 7 to 9 hours of sleep nightly or 50 hours a week to help repair your ravaged mind and body and prolong your presence on Earth and the BBC.
Neil.
If I hit that $1 billion lottery tonight, history will be made. You'll be calling me.
Jerry.
Eric Adams, let police officers and the public know that it's okay for police officers to use tasers and mace on you if you refuse to get out of the car. They can't frisk you. That's all I meant, Dominic Carter, earlier.
Paul.
Jeffrey Deskovic was wrongfully convicted of murder. He's now an attorney who helps the wrongfully convicted at DeskovicFoundation.org. DeskovicFoundation.org. DeskovicFoundation.org.
Mike.
Morning, Frank. There was an update on the Trump fines. With the reduction in fines to $175 million, that would require 17.5 billion pennies, weighing approximately 330,000 pounds. It would take 8.25 cement trucks to make that delivery. Not sure how many wrappers will be required, but I'm pretty sure Pete...
Frank Moreno, good day.